Now, here's an interesting thing. The court rejected the notion that the reason given for her termination was false. Remember I said she was terminated for insubordination. Well, this was a situation where in the meeting to terminate her, she says, I was told A, B, and C. Well, Ricotta testified, no, I told her C, D, and E. Okay, so they have two outlying reasons each. But guess what was common was C, which was insubordination. So the court said, hey, they both agreed she was terminated for insubordination, regardless of whether you get into all this other stuff. So we don't think that the reason for termination was false. And then the court also rejected the similarly situated evidence that she presented. And we know from all the cases decided recently by the Texas Supreme Court and Courts of Appeals, that is a very high standard to establish that somebody is similarly situated, because you've got to establish they've engaged in almost nearly identical misconduct. They have to come in nearly identical circumstances. And here her comparison was, okay, I'm terminated for insubordination. There are two younger paralegals who submitted false timesheets, and you didn't terminate them. And the court said, apples and oranges. That's not similarly, they're not similarly situated. That's not nearly identical misconduct. So to me, obviously on the defense side, I think this is an important case. We're going to see it a lot in challenging retaliation verdicts and in moving for summary judgment and things that we try to do in cases. So Jason, Chris, interested in your viewpoint on it.
Well, CB, it might not surprise you that I have a little different view on this case. I think everything you just said sounds like a great jury argument. I'm sure they were made, but I think you would be hard-pressed to find a case where the court went to such lengths to substitute its judgment for that of a jury. So I was very surprised by how this case read. I think the but-for causation is diverging significantly from federal employment law, and quite frankly, for plaintiffs' attorneys, I think this case really raises the question as to maybe federal court's a better place to go. I think the court, the idea of but-for causation that was raised in Bostock versus Clayton County by the U.S. Supreme Court provides a view of but-for causation that is very different than what was raised in this case. So I think we just have to come to terms with that on both sides in terms of which forum we're going to go to if we have a retaliation case.
Fair enough. Okay, want to move on to another Texas Supreme Court case. And this one, I think, kind of has a little bit for both sides of the docket. And the issue here is a request for an extended leave of absence a reasonable accommodation, and is a request for reasonable accommodation protected activity under Chapter 21? And just briefly, the facts are Mr. Lara worked for TxDOT. He had some medical problems. He had to have surgery. During the course of that, he exhausted all of his FMLA leave, and then he exhausted all of his state sick pool leave. So he had no paid leave available to him. His doctor gave him a note, says he still needs to be off and he'll return to work. We think he'll return to work in 5 weeks. So that was the situation. He could have submitted a leave without pay. There was a process to do so. He did not, but he did communicate to TxDOT, I want to preserve my job. Please accommodate me in some way. TxDOT ultimately did not. They terminated his employment because of his exhaustion of leave. So he sued and he claimed you failed to accommodate my disability and you also retaliated against me because I requested accommodation. So those are the issues that went to the Supreme Court. On the reasonable accommodation issue, the Supreme Court ultimately said this is a fact issue. We're not going to hold one way or the other as a matter of law, but this is a question that should go to the jury. Did TxDOT attempt to reasonably accommodate him? And the reason they rejected TxDOT's arguments that you shouldn't even let it go to a jury, TxDOT made some creative arguments, I suppose. They said, well, he didn't submit the paperwork. Remember, you got to submit a formal request for leave without pay, and he didn't do that. Texas Supreme Court said, yeah, you're elevating form over substance. He told TxDOT he wanted to retain his employment. He wanted some type of accommodation, so he does not have to that follow specific letters to the law in order to preserve his rights. So they rejected that. TxDOT also argued, well, he was really requesting indefinite leave. And remember, if you've worked in this area, you know that a request for indefinite leave is not a reasonable accommodation. But here, he wasn't requesting indefinite leave, the court held. Said he was requesting 5 weeks of leave. And the fact that his doctor said he's going to have to be out in the future because he's going to have other surgery doesn't mean he's requesting indefinite leave. So they rejected those arguments and said a jury should decide whether he should have been reasonably accommodated. Now under the retaliation issue, which is interesting, is the request for a reasonable accommodation in and of itself protected activity? If he had sued under the Americans with Disabilities Act, it would be, because the language under the ADA is different and it specifically says requesting a reasonable accommodation is protected activity. That's not the language under Chapter 21. So the court had to decide, are we going to essentially adopt that as the language, or are we going to follow or create our own path? And the court said, sometimes it can be. A request for a reasonable accommodation can be. But that's when it's accompanied by something indicating that the employee has a belief that discrimination is in play. So, for example, if the employee is denied a reasonable accommodation and in talking to the employer, they say, you know what, I think you're doing this, you're discriminating against me by denying that.